It's 12:06 and time for Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI. We hope you join today's conversation by giving us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined by my Wednesday partner in crime, Dr. Barth Ravitz.
Hi, Sarah. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Barth?
Well, good. We've got an interesting guest here in the studio with us this morning, Dr. Dale Sloan, who's a local surgeon, a member of the Indiana Surgical Specialties. And he's going to tell us some aspects of surgery for weight management here. Welcome, Dr. Sloan.
Thank you very much.
Let's start off by talking a little bit about the Bariatric Surgery Center of Excellence. What kind of work are you all doing there?
Well, we help people to lose a significant amount of weight. Mm-hmm. Some people can lose weight with diets if they have to lose a modest amount of weight. But we deal with people who have to lose 100 to 200 to even 300 pounds of weight, people who are termed morbidly obese. And these individuals are at least 100 pounds overweight and over their ideal body weight. And so those individuals have a very small possibility that they can lose the amount of weight that they need to lose with just diet and exercise.
Okay. So these are folks that have maybe tried the traditional methods of losing weight and need something extra.
Exactly. They've tried weight loss diets many times, almost all people that are that overweight, and they need something more drastic to get them started on losing weight and keeping it off.
Okay. And the center has been open since 2005, is that correct?
That's correct. We did our first patient in April 2005. We've done over 850 bariatric surgery patients since then, and are continuing to have see patients and do more surgeries weekly.
Great. And let's talk exactly what the bariatric surgery process is like, because, a lot of people, when they think of weight loss surgeries, they think more cosmetic of tummy tucks or something like that. So what exactly is a bariatric surgery? And tell us a little bit about the procedure itself.
Okay. Bariatric surgery is the same thing as weight loss surgery, mm-hmm. But it's not cosmetics. It's, obviously if you lose weight, you're probably going to look better also, mm-hmm. but that's not the primary purpose. The primary purpose is to get people to be healthier and to feel better. The weight loss surgery that we do, we have three different types of surgery that we do. It's not just one surgery fits all. Mm-hmm. There are the laparoscopic adjustable gastric band is one type. The Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is a second type. And the third, more recent type, is what's called a laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy. Now, all these surgeries are done with laparoscopy with just small holes to make the recovery much quicker and less discomfort and pain. Mm-hmm. The band surgery is a band that goes around the upper part of the stomach and helps individuals have a sense of fullness with eating just a small amount of food. Mm-hmm. The Roux-en-Y gastric bypass actually takes the upper part of the stomach, creates a small pouch, and then reconnects the intestine directly to that small pouch, mm-hmm. so it bypasses part of the stomach and the small intestine. And then the sleeve gastrectomy actually makes a small tube about the diameter of an individual's thumb. It makes a tube about that size from the esophagus or the swallowing tube all the way to the end of the stomach, mm-hmm. and removes about 85% of the stomach. That helps you lose weight by actually not only decreasing the size of the stomach, but it actually takes away the part of the stomach that creates the hunger hormone ghrelin. So patients basically just aren't hungry and are able to eat a very small amount of food and lose weight.
Mm-hmm. Is this, these are long-term solution surgeries, is that correct? Is there going to be follow-up maintenance if you decide that one of these bariatric surgeries is something that you need to do in order to maintain a healthy weight?
Yes, at the Lutheran Health Network Bariatric Center, what we do, well, I'll just go through the process, yeah, and we'll talk about that as you mentioned before. Individuals have the opportunity to come to one of our bariatric seminars. We generally hold two bariatric seminars. They're free seminars, no obligation. We hold them twice a month. People can come and just find out about bariatric surgery, see if it's something they're interested in. And they can call, the phone number is 435-7844, 435-7844. And they just make a reservation for one of those free slots at the seminar.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is held at 7 o'clock in the evening and one at 12 noon. Once they've gone to the seminar, if they're interested in bariatric surgery, pursuing it further, then we work with them on insurance payments, trying to figure out how insurance will work with them. Once they're approved by insurance or a way of paying for the surgery, then we have about 4 weeks of education before surgery and some weight, improvement in nutrition, make sure they're adequately nutritionally repleted so that they can have the surgery as safely as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then after surgery, we see them for 6 to 12 weeks after surgery for follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dr. Sloan, are there some big health complications that people can avoid after having the bariatric surgeries?
Well, there are what are called medical comorbidities,
mm-hmm,
which are medical problems that go along with being that overweight, such as diabetes. Diabetes is a big problem for a lot of people. And most type 2 diabetics, if they would have never gotten that overweight, they might not ever become diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they can lose a significant amount of weight, then a lot of times the diabetes goes completely away. But if not, then it generally gets significantly better.
Uh-huh.
And they're able to get off their insulin, be able to throw away a lot of their pills, and just become healthier. Heart disease, high lipids in the blood, pregnancy-related problems where we can make people, the pregnancy safer. Polycystic ovary syndrome, which
mm-hmm,
can sometimes prevent pregnancy, can be improved. Just arthritis, pain from arthritis, back pain, lots of different problems. High blood pressure can be improved with a significant amount of weight loss.
Mm-hmm. The patients are even at some risk for certain cancers, aren't they, if they're morbidly obese?
Yes, we found out that lots of different types of cancers, colon mm-hmm, cancers, endometrial cancers, are a higher rate if
uh-huh,
you're overweight.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. 260-452-1185 is the number to call. If you have a question or a comment, you can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia. I'm joined by my Wednesday co-host, Dr. Barth Ragatz, and in the studio is Dale Sloan of the Lutheran Healthcare Network, and he's also of the Bariatric Surgery Center of Excellence. And we're talking about weight loss surgeries and the research that goes along with it. We were talking a little bit before the show started about the wide range of folks that have sought out this this surgery. And I believe you mentioned the youngest person was 16 years old.
17. The youngest we've done.
Wow.
There are some centers that kind of specialize in adolescent mm-hmm, bariatrics also, and they've done them even younger than that.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to imagine, but obviously is a problem of, younger people developing such weight loss or weight issues at such a young age. There are cases, I'm sure, where people do have certain circumstances or health issues that, to no fault of their own, this is just weight that they haven't been able to take off. But what preventative measures do you, try to educate people that come through your doors about, some good practices that they need to take with them once they're done?
Well, that's one of the things that we pride ourselves on is lots of education,
mm-hmm,
nutritional education. It's interesting that of our bariatric surgery patients, they start eating differently and emphasizing health and nutrition, and other people in the house a lot of times will lose weight and become healthier also. So that is a very strong component.
Mm-hmm.
It's estimated that 300,000 to 400,000 individuals who are morbidly obese die prematurely every year. It's a second largest cause of premature deaths, preventable premature deaths in the United States, second only to cigarette smoking.
Wow.
So it is a very important public health issue. The costs of obesity are really staggering.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, you said that the oldest person that you all have treated has been around 72 years of age.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking as well before the show that with any surgery, the risks are higher the older that you get.
Correct. With any surgery, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But bariatric surgery, the way we do it now, we evaluate the patients very well preoperatively or before surgery,
mm-hmm.
and get them prepared for the surgery with the education and testing. And it's really thought to be a very relatively safe surgery now. Somewhere in the neighborhood of taking out a gallbladder, or less risky than taking out a colon or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And have you noticed with the patients that you've seen, is there a trend with seeing more female versus male patients, or is gender, have you noticed one gender over the other, more one race more than another? Are there any trends that you all have been able to track since 2005?
Yes, it's a significantly more women than men are seeking bariatric surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I'm not sure whether that's consistent with the rate of obesity, but women seem to be more willing to take the courageous step of, trying to work on their health and try to improve their physical functioning with weight loss surgery.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
How does one decide which type of surgery to do on a particular patient there, Dr. Sloan?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I tell my patients in our seminars that the nice thing is that all the surgeries that we do are recognized as being good weight loss
mm-hmm.
surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
And, so if they come in with a particular bias, Aunt Matilda had one particular mm-hmm. type and they want that same thing, that's fine. On the other hand, there are some differences that are significant. The lap band, you have to be more disciplined because you can drink a milkshake, you can eat ice cream and cake, you can, any liquid or semi-liquid you can still eat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're drinking milkshakes, you're probably not going to lose a lot of weight.
Uh-huh.
So the results are a little more variable there. The sleeve is probably the newest one, and a lot of people like the idea that with the sleeve, you actually lose your hunger. And so, you don't care about eating that extra food,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it easier to eat a very small amount and to lose weight with that. And you don't have, you have minimal malabsorption of vitamins and minerals like you might get with the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, though the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass is also an excellent
uh-huh.
surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, another thing that I was thinking of, you mentioned with the laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy that a portion of the stomach is removed, and that's the portion that secretes ghrelin. Are there any real big advances going on right now in the whole biology of obesity? Do we see any sort of weight loss pills on the horizon that actually work?
Well, you may have read or heard recently about a pill that was recently approved by the FDA that's a combination of pill
uh-huh.
of a couple other things that have already been used in the past. The problem with weight gain and obesity is that it's so multifactorial.
Mm-hmm.
There's the emotional, there's the hormonal, there's genetic, there's environmental. I mean, there's so many different factors involved. Now, with people who, again, have moderate obesity, if you're 30, 40, 50, even 75 pounds overweight, then, some of these a dietary pill along with counseling and weight
mm-hmm.
loss and a good diet may be enough to bring you back down into a more healthy range.
Uh-huh.
But for the people that are 100, 150 pounds, 200 pounds overweight, and have already tried those things, mm-hmm. those are the people that we can really help with the bariatric surgery program.
260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia. I'm joined by my Wednesday co-host, Barth Raggetts. And in the studio today, we have Dr. Dale Sloan of the Bariatric Surgery Center of Excellence in town. And we're talking about weight management and surgeries that go along with that for those that need a more drastic change in their lives. And you mentioned a little bit about the emotional part that goes along with this surgery. What kind of, if any, treatment do people need to seek post-surgery to take care of their emotional side of, you know, coming into a new body? I imagine that plays takes a little bit of a toll of somebody psychologically.
It certainly can. You know, if you've been overweight all your life and your nickname is Big Jim, and then you lose a bunch of weight and you look more like Slim Jim, you know, people react to you, especially people who haven't seen you for a little while. They may treat you differently. You know, if you're in a job and you're not used to the attention of a male coworkers, that sort of thing, that can be a very big change. Mm-hmm. And those sorts of things can happen. At our bariatric center, we have psychologists and behaviorists, especially, that are attuned to those sorts of issues, mm-hmm. and they talk about them. We can give education about that. We can give individual personal counseling to try to help overcome any issues that might come up along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more of Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 452-1185, or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
On the next Fresh Air, a behind-the-scenes look at President Obama. We talk with Michael Lewis about his article, Obama's Way, in Vanity Fair. Lewis was given an unusual amount of access to the president, traveling with him, interviewing him, even playing a game of basketball with him. Lewis is the author of Moneyball, Liar's Poker, and The Big Short. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOI. The time is 12:26. We have just about 5 minutes left in this first half of our show, but if you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia. I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Barth Raggetts. And in the studio today, we have Dr. Dale Sloan of the Bariatric Surgery Center of Excellence. We're talking about weight management and surgeries that can help you manage your weight. And Dr. Sloan, I wanted to make sure that we cover the recovery time of this surgery before you leave. Tell us a little bit about how long folks would be expected to stay in the hospital post-surgery.
Well, it's amazing even to me the rapidity with which people that have these fairly major surgeries are able to get out of the hospital. With the lap band, most people go home the same day, actually. With the sleeve and the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, people go home either the evening of the day after surgery or the following day. I did two bariatric surgeries on Monday, and they both went home on Tuesday.
Wow.
So that is amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, you also mentioned earlier there, Dr. Sloan, that those folks that crave malts still can have some malts. What would be kind of the typical dietary regimen after they've had one of these surgeries?
Well, right after surgery, most of them start out in liquids and then go to a purine diet. But once you get out of the post-operative period, we want our patients to eat just normal, healthy food. Just like everyone else should eat. They can eat, steak and vegetables. I want them to eat healthy protein and vegetables and fresh fruit, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I suppose one moderation is best is kind of what you're saying with the regulation of, because I assume that one could overdo it if you're not used to kind of regulating what you're eating and eating those three meals a day.
That's correct. And over a period of time, individuals who've had bariatric surgery have to continue to stay on top of their healthy habits, because there are some people that actually gain weight back after bariatric surgery. Mm-hmm. And so they need to be aware of that and watch out for it.
Mm-hmm. We have Eric with a question on line one. Eric, are you there?
I am, yes.
Go ahead with your question.
Actually, I had a couple of comments. I am a person who suffers from an eating disorder of overeating, which I think is common. One, I just wanted to say I've seen some ties with depression and anxiety and overeating. And the other comment I had was I met a guy one time who had had surgery, and he was told by the doctor that that if he didn't replace one habit, might replace another. And this was a person who did not drink heavily, and then after having the surgery and food no longer was a crutch, then alcohol became a crutch. And I found that fascinating.
That's interesting. Have you had any experience with that, Dr. Sloan, of people replacing one vice for another?
It doesn't happen commonly, but it certainly can, especially if people have there's something called an addictive personality. And so if it's an addictive personality to food and they're overweight and then that's taken away, you can go to gambling or, alcohol or what have you. And so those are the types of things that we need to talk to people and educate people about and support people after surgery.
Mm-hmm. And as far as Eric made an interesting comment about depression and anxiety playing a role with overeating, is have you experienced more patients with that also have those symptoms of anxiety, depression? Do those often go hand in hand?
They often do, but it's hard to know which came first. I mean, are they depressed and anxious because they're 150 pounds overweight?
Yes.
Or does that contribute to it? There are a lot of depressed and anxious people that aren't overweight also. So actually that losing weight can make that better. Obviously, on an individual basis, you could even make it worse. But generally, most of those health and psychosocial issues get better with the weight loss.
We have just a moment left in the first half of the show, and I want to make sure that we give our listening audience the information that they can use to decide if this is something that they need for them. So give us the who, what, when, where on the lectures or the seminars that you all provide about bariatric surgery.
Again, the seminars are held right on the Lutheran Health Network campus there at Lutheran Hospital. There'd be signs up, but the phone number is the most important thing because they can give you all the directions, all the details, and you can call 260-435-7844 or 435-7098.
Great. And we'll post that on our Facebook page as well. And one last question. We have a caller who wanted to relay a message. He wants to know if you've heard of a company called the Bariatric Advantage that works with nutritional supplements and if those supplements are often necessary post-operation. Is that ring a bell?
Yes, I'm quite aware of Bariatric mm-hmm. Advantage. They're a good company. Mm-hmm. We do recommend, especially with the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass patients, those individuals, and as part of our education, need to be on vitamins every day the rest of their life. So we educate the patients well about what they need and mm-hmm. do testing and so forth to try to make sure that they're adequately replaced.
All right. Well, Dr. Sloan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, but Barth and I will be back with more of Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI in just a few moments.
When it comes to fundraising by phone, many big-name charities use the same telemarketing company, but much of what you give goes straight to the telemarketer.
The solicitors are taught, using scripts, to lie, to tell people that most of the money is actually going to the charity.
More on that later, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon, I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. Nobel Peace Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi plans to speak to Fort Wayne's Burmese community in their native language during her visit this month. Suu Kyi speaks fluent English, but organizers say plans are for her entire presentation on September 25th to be in Burmese. IPFW Vice President George McClellan says that Suu Kyi's remarks will be translated and then displayed as English text on a screen behind her. McClellan says tickets will not be needed for seating off the arena floor for the free public speech. Some 4,000 Burmese live in the Fort Wayne area, one of the largest concentrations in the country. On Tuesday, Fort Wayne Mayor Tom Henry and city leaders announced plans to work together to increase job opportunities in Fort Wayne. WBOI's Sarah D'Elia has more.
On Tuesday, members of the City of Fort Wayne, Allen County, the Greater Fort Wayne Chamber of Commerce, the Fort Wayne-Allen County Economic Development Alliance, and the Downtown Improvement District shared preliminary plans to collaborate with one another in order to better Fort Wayne's economy. Mayor Tom Henry says although no definite plans have been made, the city has already begun taking notes from communities in Kentucky, Milwaukee, and Washington on their joint efforts between community organizations and the cities.
Most of it right now involves what kind of structure do we want to have? How can we be the most efficient, effective organization we can be? How do we want to set this whole thing up? We've already brought in some consultants. We're going to other cities, seeing how they've set up their organizations. We're trying to incorporate best practices, and then we'll see what happens.
The city says leaders hope to have a recommendation in place by the end of the year as to how this collaboration will function and will best serve Fort Wayne. For WBOI News, I'm Sarah D'Elia.
The worst drought in decades does not appear to be affecting Indiana's farmland values. Purdue University says its June survey shows a statewide increase in farmland value ranging from 14% to 18%, depending on land quality, since last year's survey. Purdue Extension agricultural economist Craig Dobbins cites robust net farm incomes, favorable interest rates, strong demand, and a limited supply of farmland for sale for the increases. And the Midwest League Championship Series begins tonight in Appleton, Wisconsin, with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps meeting the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. WBOY's Doug Gruber has a preview.
It's a best-of-five series with the first two games in Wisconsin. Game one is tonight at 7:35, with Thursday's game in the afternoon at 1:05. The Timber Rattlers decided on an afternoon game Thursday rather than conflict with the Packers-Bears football game that night. What do the Tin Caps know about Wisconsin? Not much. The two teams met for only three games this season. That was in mid-July, and the Tin Caps won two of the three. Wisconsin easily won the first half Western Division title, but slipped in the second half, finishing two games under 500. They reached the finals by eliminating Burlington in three games and sweeping Clinton in two games. Friday will be a day off. Then the series comes to Parkview Field Saturday night. If a Sunday game is needed, starting time will be 5:05, and the fifth game would be Monday at 7:05. If the Tin Caps manage to win three and become league champions, it would happen at Parkview Field. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
You're listening to Midday Matters Health 360 here on 89.1 FM. Now, back to Sarah D'Elia.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. The time is 12:37. If you'd like to join our conversation today, we'd love to hear your questions and comments, so get ready to give us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page or send us a note at middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and I'm joined in the studio by my Wednesday co-host, Dr. Barth Ragatz.
Hi, Sarah. I'm going to welcome Deb Borisic, who's a nurse practitioner, and she's on the faculty at IPFW, one of our favorite local universities there. And among Deb's duties, she supervises nursing students at the IPFW clinic that's associated with the Lafayette Medical Center. Welcome, Deb.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, you're going to talk to us today a bit about sexually transmitted diseases. And I was curious right off the bat here, which ones are prevalent these days in Allen County?
Well, in Allen County, we unfortunately have the highest rate of chlamydia in the state of Indiana, which I think directly relates to the fact that we also have the highest rate of teen pregnancies the state of Indiana. HPV, human papillomavirus, is also very prevalent, but chlamydia currently is the most common reportable disease.
Well, that's a bit amazing and shocking. Out of 92 counties, we're in the forefront of chlamydia and also teen pregnancies.
Yes, it is pretty shocking.
Yes. Could you tell us a little bit about the symptoms and how one goes about diagnosing chlamydial infections there?
Sure. I think one of the problems with chlamydia is that 70% of patients who have chlamydia, and that's male and female, have no symptoms. So it's hard for patients to come into a clinic, whether it be a clinic like ours or the Allen County Board of Health, and say, I have symptoms of an STD, whether it be male penis symptoms or women with vaginal symptoms, because so few people have symptoms.
I see.
So the patients who do have symptoms, men and women may experience symptoms such as a urinary tract infection symptoms, so burning with urination. Mm-hmm. Women will be more symptomatic than men, so they may, of the 30% of patients who are actually symptomatic, may have green vaginal discharge, pain with intercourse. We frequently see menstrual irregularities, so spotting in between periods or bleeding after they have intercourse.
Okay. That's all very interesting. Now, what sort of things would we then do to treat these patients?
Well, the good thing about chlamydia, and that's the one good thing about chlamydia, is it's very treatable. So it's treated with an antibiotic, either azithromycin, and that's a one-time dose, or a seven-day course of doxycycline.
Okay.
And then it's most patients should probably have a test of cure. We do a test of cure at our clinic in 3 months, just to make sure that the patient either hasn't gotten a repeat infection or reinfected from the same partner who maybe didn't get treated.
Okay.
Or just to make sure that they're cleared.
Yes. And you say particularly we see a high incidence of this in the younger age group.
We do. The most common or the most prevalent age for chlamydia is 20 to 24. And so right now we are part of the Infertility Prevention Project, which is a federal project that the state of Indiana does to prevent the long-term consequences of infertility, because they are pretty significant.
Okay. So this is another thing that can be a cause of infertility long-term.
Right. You know, with each incidence of chlamydia, because chlamydia is infects the cells of the cervix, that chlamydia, if it's left untreated for any period of time, can, or people have recurrent infections. Chlamydia is what's called an ascending infection. That means it goes up into the uterus and into the tubes. And as it sits in the tubes, it causes scarring. So the tube scars down, and either the egg can't get to the sperm or the sperm can't get to the egg, depending on the blockage. And so there is a very high risk of infertility with patients, especially if they have more than one incidence of chlamydia.
Okay. Now, what do we tell them then in the way of prevention after they leave the clinic?
Well, prevention, obviously abstinence.
Uh-huh.
Abstinence is the only way to not get any sexually transmitted disease or to not get pregnant. However, we all know that people are sexually active.
Yes.
And so prevention has got to be so important with condom use.
Also,
it's really important that they use condoms every single time.
Yes.
And also the number of partners that men and women have in their life. Obviously, the more partners someone's exposed to in their lifetime, the more risk they have of getting any sexually transmitted disease, including HIV.
So we definitely would promote monogamous relationships.
Absolutely.
There. And, you know, I think maybe with young people, there might be a little confusion there about, you know, the difference between contraception and the difference between preventing STDs. You know, I've heard anecdotally some stories about young people thinking, well, I'm on the birth control pill, or I always use a spermicide before intercourse, and therefore I must be protected. Would you address that a little bit for us?
You are correct about that. You know, one of the things at our clinic that we specifically try to educate patients about is that birth control, such as the Depo-Provera shot, the birth control pill, the patch of the ring, none of those prevent men or women from sexually transmitted diseases or HIV. So, you know, condom use has to be consistent, has to be every time. And honestly, that's something that we don't see.
Now, you mentioned too, I think before we went on the air, that you also see a fairly high incidence of HPV. And is that also in younger people?
Well, you know what? We're seeing HPV in all ages. You know, one of the things that puts any men or women at more risk is having more multiple partners in their life. And we typically see that in the age group of teens or 20 to 24. And as people age out of that 24 age category, we see more people move into monogamous relationships. And that's just anecdotally that we see that with our patients. However, HPV is a virus, and people can, HPV is cleared for a lot of men and women just by their own healthy immune systems. So we know that someone can be exposed to HPV and infected at any point in their sexual life. So somebody could have been exposed to HPV and infected 10 years before the onset where they actually begin to have problems with HPV. And those are the patients we know then don't clear that on their own.
So in some cases, it's kind of a slow, malingering, asymptomatic situation there.
Correct. You know, they can, one of the major consequences of HPV is precancerous and cancerous conditions. And that's, we see that in men and women. So with women, we see if they have the high risk HPV types, we see an increased incidence of cervical cancer. We also see an increased risk in vaginal and vulvar cancers. And there's a very high correlation between anal cancers now, and that is in men and women. We see that more so in men who are having sex with men, with women who are having anal sex. But there's also now a huge correlation between oral cancers, so mouth and throat cancers related to HPV that is hooked directly to oral sex.
All right. Now, there's at least two different kinds of vaccines for HPV. Who do we recommend get these vaccinations and so forth?
You're correct. There are two different types. So Gardasil prevents or gives immunity, rather, to types, the two high-risk HPV types, 16 and 18, and the low-risk types, 6 or 8 and 11, 6 and 11. And so that provides immunity to four types. The Cervarix provides immunity just to the two high-risk HPV types, 16 and 18.
Mm-hmm.
So we recommend, the recommendation is to get boys and girls, so it's boys now also, boys and girls immunized before the onset of sexual activity. So the recommendation is for about the ages of 11 to 12 right now. But the vaccine, both vaccines are approved, FDA approved for the ages of 9 through 26.
Uh-huh. I see. What did you say that second compound was? I'd heard of Gardasil.
It's called
Cervarix. Cervarix. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or Cervirax. It's said both ways.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sarah, do you have any?
I do. Well, I wanted to ask while you were here, you know, it's fairly easy to treat these STDs that, like chlamydia, if we know the symptoms and we go in on time and, you know, get everything taken care of. There are drugs for these things now. But I remember earlier on in the summer, there was a case of a drug-resistant form of gonorrhea. And I wonder, what are the steps that we take then when it's these traditional medications and methods of, you know, clearing up STDs aren't working? What would somebody do that has contracted something like that?
Well, you're very correct about the drug resistance gonorrhea. This year we've seen, well, actually over the last couple years, particularly so in this year, we've seen the CDC has seen a large number of cases of gonorrhea that are resistant to the particular drugs that we've always used.
Mm-hmm.
Now, probably about 2 years ago, we stopped using Cipro to treat gonorrhea because of resistance,
mm-hmm.
and used a drug called Suprax. And now we're finding that gonorrhea, there is a lot of gonorrhea resistance to the cephalosporin. So we're now looking at treating gonorrhea with just an intramuscular injection of ceftriaxone, or the brand name is Rocephin.
Uh-huh.
That's the, now is up probably about, I would say maybe 2 to 3 months ago, the CDC came out with a recommendation to only use ceftriaxone as an intramuscular injection for the treatment of gonorrhea for patients who we can't treat with that because either they're unwilling to come into the clinic or they have drug allergies. Then we treat with another cephalosporin called Suprax. However, the recommendation from the CDC now is to bring that patient back that we treat with Suprax,
mm-hmm.
and reculture them at 1 week. If at 1 week they're still positive, then to send that sample for a culture and sensitivity to actually pinpoint whether that is one of the resistant strains of gonorrhea.
Okay. So if somebody does contract something that is drug resistant, they shouldn't be too alarmed. There are other options, and it seems like there is kind of a cycle of drugs going through a phase of not being able to fully clear the sexually transmitted disease. So you shouldn't panic too much.
You shouldn't panic too much, but you know, we all should start to worry when we start to have diseases that are antibiotic resistant.
Oh yeah.
Because
yes.
You know, where do we go from that point?
Mm-hmm.
Once if
Absolutely.
So now we're using ceftriaxone. What happens when we get to the point where ceftriaxone is resistant? So, no, people shouldn't panic. You know, we now have a drug that we know works for gonorrhea.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the CDC has guidelines published for, and anybody can go online to cdc.gov mm-hmm. and type in STD treatment guidelines. And the current guidelines, there is actually a full book on recommendations for treating STDs. And they do that so that we aren't using antibiotics or treatments that aren't successful, and we're not developing more resistance by using a whole bunch of different drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with drug resistance here, I guess we'd really like to stress return for those repeat visits. Are people pretty good about doing that these days?
No. to be honest, they're not. You know, we follow up. We work very closely with the Allen County Board of Health in making sure patients, you know, gonorrhea, chlamydia, HIV, those are reportable conditions.
Uh-huh.
That means by law we have to report that and hepatitis. Unfortunately, things like trichomonas, which is a sexually transmitted disease, and HPV, those are not reportable diseases.
Oh, okay.
So with gonorrhea and chlamydia, HIV, hepatitis, we know that those patients are going to get followed up on. We complete what's called a morbidity card,
uh-huh.
and that goes to the Board of Health stating we've treated a patient or we haven't been able to contact that patient to treat them.
Yes.
That patient also fills out a partner sheet for anyone they've had intercourse with in the last 60 days.
Uh-huh.
And then the Board of Health will follow up with those partners to make sure they come in and get treated.
Yes.
We try to follow up with our patients to make sure they come back for that three-month culture. If they don't come, we try to follow up at the next visit to make sure. And like I said, we are part of the Infertility Prevention Project, which is making sure that anyone who comes in for their annual exam or an initial exam at our clinic, if they're under the age of 27, they get a gonorrhea and chlamydia culture automatically.
Oh, very good. Very good. You had mentioned earlier that you had some statistics about other things in the way of the STD realm here in Allen County. Could you share some of that with us?
Well, I can share it with the, as far as chlamydia, and now these statistics are from 2010 and 2011, just because we don't have 2012 statistics yet. But for chlamydia, in 2010, the Allen County rate was 513 compared to the Indiana rate of 341. So you can see where we are way ahead. And unfortunately, in 2011, it went up to 539 compared to 341 or 426. So we're still way ahead. With gonorrhea, you know, luckily, gonorrhea is not increasing in its rate like chlamydia is.
Uh-huh.
Gonorrhea rates are actually dropping, but Allen County was still ahead of the other counties. In Northeast Indiana, and this is for 12 counties, then this is kind of astounding. There were 2,956 cases of chlamydia and 628 cases of gonorrhea.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty significant. Unfortunately, 827 of those cases of chlamydia were from Allen County.
So, yeah.
Now, the thing is, you know, when we look at Allen County and all of us who work with STDs, we say, okay, so is Allen County the number one county in STDs because our patients in this area have more chlamydia, or are we finding more chlamydia patients because they come to the Board of Health for screening, or they come to patients or places like our clinic for contraceptive services, and we do screening for them. So we're finding more, maybe, than the other counties.
Yes.
So we don't know whether the prevalence is really higher here, or we just are able to report more because we see more patients.
Yes.
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't do the math completely in my head there, Deb, but if we're seeing several hundred cases per year and there's about 300,000 people in Allen County, why, I guess statistically your chances would be about 1 in 1,000 there, maybe a bit higher. And as you pointed out, too, with high-risk behaviors, that puts you up even more. Certainly we can see that STDs are more prevalent than people getting hit by buses or struck by lightning.
Very
here.
True.
No doubt about it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we've probably put the burden of renegade sexuality on the younger people under age 30 here. Is there anything you want to say about the 60-plus-year-olds?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we see divorce rates are higher now today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chances of staying married are about the same as the chances of getting divorced
anymore.
Yes,
that's right.
And so we do see a lot of, you know, middle-aged to senior population entering into the realm of sexuality where they haven't been before for a long time. With the use of Viagra, men who are older who have not been sexually active are now starting to be sexually active.
Uh-huh.
And so we do see seniors and middle-aged people getting STDs. It's not just specific. It's just more common in the younger age group. But I actually might have a statistic on age if I can find it. But I'll look while I talk.
Okay.
You know, one of the things we know with middle age and seniors is that they aren't necessarily using contraception because women have become menopausal by the time they get to those years. And so they don't think, well, I need to use a condom, because some people think, okay, I'll use a condom for birth control.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily thinking STD prevention.
That's right.
They're thinking it for birth control. So we do see a lot of this, you know, middle to upper generation becoming sexually active and not using condoms
because
they're not thinking about it as a form of birth control. So it is really important that those patients who are entering that dating realm again, whether it's because of the loss of a partner from death or divorce, or that they are educated about sexually transmitted disease, that it's not just a young person's disease.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I read somewhere recently is that in the United States, because of the effective management of people with that are positive for HIV, that in another 10 or 20 years, a big portion of those people are going to be in the age of 50 and older. So HIV, once again, is not merely a young person's disease.
It's not a young person's disease anymore, because we are seeing more and more people living longer, healthier lives because of the antivirals and the treatment that's out there. So, again, that just points to the importance of protecting oneself. And whether it's, you know, limiting partners, using condoms, or being monogamous, being abstinent in the lifetime, those are really important choices that we have to educate teens and adults to make. And you know, another thing is, you know, we talk about the fact that these are so prevalent in the younger population, but we have to educate parents. Parents have to be present in kids' lives. They have to educate kids. You know, we do have pretty limited access to the school system as far as education about contraception. You know, the Lafayette Street Clinic is part of a task force that Dr. Deb McMahon from the Board of Health started just a couple months ago. We've met several times, and it's kind of a task force looking at how we can, number one, decrease the STD and the teen pregnancy rates in Allen County, but how do we do that in a whole? Because we have people from school systems coming, from Big Brothers Big Sisters, from many of the agencies around Allen County, and we're looking at what do we do now as a community, not just as my office and your office. And we want teens and parents and schools, we want them all to hear the same information about healthy living and healthy lifestyle choices. And if they don't start by making good life choices, then it's harder to get kids back on track.
Yes, exactly.
We've just about run out of time for this episode of Midday Matters Health 360, but thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Deb, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Mad Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and streaming online at our new website, nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. Thanks very much to all of our email writers and callers. It was a great show. Barth and I will be back same time, same place, for more Health 360 Midday Matters next week, next Wednesday at noon, right here on WBOI. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.